The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
The programme for government is going to be published in all its glory. With me to discuss, Megan Scully, the broadcaster and freelance journalist, Conor Skeehan, the columnist, and Lorcan Nyan, head of training at the Communications Clinic, and a columnist as well with the Sunday Independent. You're all very, very welcome. So Lorcan, I mean, we're yet to see this in detail, but you know, some details have emerged nonetheless. Broad brushstrokes, every programme for government is the same, isn't it? Let's strengthen the economy, let's improve public services.
Let's do more of good things and then perhaps slightly less of letting bad things happen, Kieran, I think is the general gist of the vast majority of these documents. A lot of this, look, will have been expected, will have been flagged. I mean, look, it's basically delivered and developed by, you know, the Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael, who had, you know, detailed manifestos out during the election. And it does mirror what they were calling for, in that, you know, it's not like Help to Buy is going to be removed. That is going to maintain. So the approach to housing is going to maintain. You can see that coming. You can probably see the fingerprints of the independent grouping when there is a lot of talk about rural regeneration, community development, attracting IDA investment outside of Dublin. So those elements are mentioned. And I think if you look at the thread running through it, there is a big focus on infrastructure. There is a big focus on, we will spend big money building lots of things, be that in housing or be that
but
in
no
energy.
Department of Infrastructure.
No Department of Infrastructure. The changes within the departments are basically coming from whatever the Greens had, we will move those around and change those up a little bit. So, you know, integration and immigration is going to be moving into the Department of Justice. So the Department of Justice is quite clearly going to be a stronger role. And the Department of Foreign Affairs is also being given trade. So effectively, you can see the Department of Foreign Affairs is going to become the "we will deal with Trump and the US department," you know, when you're bringing foreign affairs and trade together. So I think what's probably lacking thus far, and we may see it, we don't always see it, and you know, as somebody who focuses on communications, it's a frustration for me, where the programme for government is a list of things they will do. What you are hoping to hear now is the vision that those things will lead to. Like, where are we trying to bring the country in the next 4 or 5 years? Yes, we're going to spend billions, but what is Ireland going to look like after that? How many wind farms will we have? Will we be the green energy leader of Europe? Or, you know, and I think the last time we probably saw that there was a clear vision from a government, you know, like or load said government, if you look at 2011, I mean, the vision of that government was very, very clear. You know, recover economic sovereignty, and as much as we heard it, make Ireland the best country in the world to do, you know, best small country in the world
to do business.
But, you know, whether you agreed with that aim or not, every decision could be taken through the lens of one of those two things. I wonder, with this programme for government, are we going to be able to see that kind of comprehensive, cohesive vision for the country?
Pascal Donoghue is going to be with me after 6 o'clock, and Conor Skeehan, he was one of those who by all accounts, was very supportive of the idea of a Department of Infrastructure and a Minister for Infrastructure. Are you relieved it's not in the programme for government?
It's on my good list here. It's on the list of things I think are good.
Okay. Why?
Because we need more administration of necessary projects, like we need a hole in the head. I mean, if you're trying to do a water project or an energy project in Ireland, you're answering to between 3 and 5 masters, and none of them have the vision you're talking about. They definitely have not got the ability to implement. What we need is less masters and more work being done. So that's a very good piece of news in my books.
What else in terms of what has emerged thus far is on the good column?
Well, I think before we go into the detail, we have to remember that we are privileged to live in a country that has a PR system that delivers coalition governments, which in turn deliver programmes for government. And they're one of those things that when you have them, you take it for granted. But the stability that a programme for government gives to everybody, on the first day, I've written a programme for government once myself, and you go in the next day, and the extent to which the senior civil servants already have their ready-made list of what their job is for the next 5 years is an incredibly stabilising element in a society which we overlook at our peril.
To what extent does this, and in your experience, does this bind the hands of the government over the next 5 years? Or does it kind of generally kind of wash up on the rocks of reality after a year or two?
No, I think it nature abhors a vacuum, and we are fortunate or unfortunate to live between two English-speaking countries that don't do that. And both the United States and the UK at the moment are sad looking places because of the absence of that directness. It doesn't have to be a kind of a high minded vision, but it has the stability of just doing the boring stuff like childcare costs, stabilising those, of having commitments to try and do something about justice, making our streets safer. They're the kind of ordinary, unspectacular things that make life wonderful.
Megan Scully is with us as well. Megan, I know you and I spoke about the kind of VAT rate and things like that in advance of the budget and in the aftermath of the budget. There was no change there. Again, to mention Pascal Donoghue, who's going to be on the show later, he was loath to reduce the VAT rate for hospitality. It looks like that is going to be included.
Well, that's what they're saying. And you'd hope it's going to happen this time, because I feel like for anyone working in the sector, there's a talk about this VAT rate for ages. And I know it was kind of used by a few government parties saying, we will, if you vote us in, and we will do this, and we will do that. And I think for those working in the industry, they probably are, it's kind of a case that if it actually happens, I'd say they won't believe it until it really does happen. But like they're on their knees out there every single day now across not even just around villages and towns anymore, it's across cities as well. So many places are having to close their doors. I just saw actually a very well-known establishment down in Limerick have just announced that they've had to close their doors straight away because they just can't cope with the costs and with the way that everything is going. And I just hope that this government would get behind, especially the independent businesses, and say, do something about keeping them here and keeping them open, because it's just so sad to see, and villages and towns and now cities are getting decimated.
Yeah, we're waiting to see the detail on it, but I mean, there's a possibility that the commitment to lower that VAT rate is a commitment to do it at the next year's budget, which means it wouldn't kind of kick in until this time next year, or this year's budget. We're in 2025, but this year's budget, which means it wouldn't kick in until for 12 months, essentially. I mean, those in the industry that you know, would they kind of be, would there be a preference for maybe kind of a supplementary budget and do it sooner?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I suppose like 12 months, it's an awful long time for people in the industry. A lot of places have to rely on the summer season. And at that, you have to rely on there being good weather for the summer season, for the outdoor seating. And as well, you know, with the minimum wage went up for them. So costs all around have gone up, up, up. But there's just nothing coming back. So there needs to be something, I think, put into place in the next few weeks if they want to sustain a lot of these businesses that are struggling.
As soon as it gets kind of officially published, we'll talk about it in exact detail. But again, to go through some of the stuff that we know or we suspect is going to be in it, Larkin, the state pension age staying as is, more investment in roads, that 2-to-1 kind of public transport to road investment ratio has been discarded. The primary school pupil teacher ratio is going to be reduced pretty significantly, down to 19-to-1. A new security force for public transport, 4,500 hospital beds. All of this means kind of big recruitment drives in lots and lots of different areas, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, if you look at the commitment to the ratio there in terms of education, that's all well and good. But the constant question is, well, where are the teachers?
Well, I did the maths, actually. So the pupil teacher ratio at the moment is 23-to-1. Some of that is actually achieved because demographics would suggest there's going to be 50,000 fewer students in primary school by the time this government comes to term. So it's easy to say we're going to improve the pupil-teacher ratio. They actually came up with a number, though, and the number would necessitate about 2,000 extra teachers, and we're about 1,000 short. Yeah. Like that's a lot, 3,000 over 5 years.
And look, you're always going to come across this in terms of any commitments around justice and policing as well as in teaching, and that when you've got full employment in an economy without totally changing the public sector or wage structure, it's going to be difficult to recruit people in those areas. So look, they have to commit to it, they have to drive it forward. I think if you talk about that ratio there, you know, almost looking after itself because of the fewer children, I mean, that then points to the first point you make there, where the pension age isn't changing as we have an ageing population. They tried that battle before the previous election to this one, lost the argument pretty thoroughly and got a kick in because of it. And so obviously now there's no bravery to
as a communication specialist, right? So in 2020, the Programme for Government, because I looked at it outside, said we will improve the pupil teacher ratio. And the pupil teacher ratio was 23-to-1 at the start of the term of government. It was 23-to-1 at the end of the term for government. And this time they've decided to include a specific target. Would it not have us been much wiser to copy and paste the commitment from 2020? Because demographically, you're going to improve it.
You remind me now of the people who give out about sports people never saying anything interesting, and then when they do they discipline them and ban them and don't let them play for Connacht. So, you know, you can't ask for clearer communication and then critique the clear communication that comes
across.
Well,
I'm asking you maybe to put on the government hat for a moment.
I think being ambitious in terms of those ambitions is good, because if you do all manage it, and it also, I think some of the mistakes that I think they fall into sometimes is if you look at what they've done in childcare over the last number of years, I think they've actually been phenomenally successful in reducing the cost of childcare, and they've done it iteratively. I would have argued maybe 3 years ago that what they should have done is saying, here's what we're trying to build in 5 years' time, and here are the four steps we're going to take year on year on year. So there was a bit of excitement and ambition rather than it feeling small and piecemeal every single time. Because to be able to get the fact that they've got childcare, to they can commit to capping it to 200. Now, they need to go much further. It needs to be public childcare. Every child who needs a childcare place needs to be able to get one free from the state, because it's the core development stage a child will have. And I think it's a failure of the state not to have public childcare from 1 to 3. But anyway, they have achieved a lot. I don't think they've ever got the credit for the achievement, because they've gone for a small step-by-step communication rather than big vision and here's how we're going to get there.
Any chance of mentioning the fact petrol and diesel has gone up 8 cents since the new year, says one listener. VAT should not be reduced for industrial caterers who serve the likes of Intel and Apple, says somebody else. Has the issue of defence come up at all in government formation talks? Or are we just going to continue to bury our heads in the sand as the world gets more dangerous? I don't know whether they have, but I understand there may be a commitment in the programme for government to a East Coast naval base, which is interesting given the Southwest Coast naval base has ships that can't go to sea because we don't have enough seamen to populate them. Megan, in terms of, say, you know, the reduction of the cost of childcare, I mean, that's an ambitious plan, €200 a month is the cap. One would suspect, again, the programme for government is going to commit to do that over the lifetime of the government and not immediately. What are the things that you might like to have seen included in it beyond that and VAT?
Well, I would love to delve more into the transport police, which I thought was quite interesting.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously, you know, I'm a big road safety campaigner, and I thought that's quite good that they'll give them powers that likes of the ones in the airports have.
So they're not going to be a Garda unit. It looks like it's going to be kind of like customs
airport police. Customs, and then I suppose probably some of the powers that those who look after Lewis maybe have. Which would be interesting, because then it'll obviously create, hopefully would, you'd imagine it would alleviate and take pressure off the Gardaí, but then actually someone has come out to say that it might make it more difficult for the Gardaí. So I'm like, you know, if you're trying to do something right, and then it's like, no, that actually doesn't help us. It's like, we're trying to take a bit of the slack here. Well, what else did I like that I saw? Well, actually, no, sorry, what I thought was interesting about the dismantling of the briefs on climate, energy and transport that Eamon brought in. And I kind of thought that they should have maybe said a little bit more on that. I was speaking to some people yesterday about climate change and who work with storms and weather and how the storms are changing and everything. Mm. And then that came out today. So I'd love if they kind of come out to give a statement about what exactly they mean by that, because we're talking about climate change and having to make all these changes. Mm. And then suddenly they're saying they're taking away all the work that Eamon Ryan put together. Now, I know some of it was quite controversial. Again, you mentioned rural Ireland there a while ago. Being a girl from a farming background, I obviously want to see more being done for the people who live in rural Ireland. Farmers, I want to see more being done for the farmers. I see Michael Healy-Ray now will be going in as junior minister for agriculture, which I think is great, because he's on the ground in Kerry. He's out there talking to the farmers and the locals. And I think that's what we need, is we need people who have lived experiences on a farm to make changes and keep the farming sector. We want to keep the farmers here. We want more young farmers. We want to be sustainable for young people to take over their family farms. So I'd like to see something more concrete there.
I think what stands out for me, my favourite so far, is that the gathering looks like it's going to be back. The year of the invitation needs a bit of a rebrand, doesn't it? The year of the invitation. That's a mouthful, I think, isn't it? Anyway, listen, there's 4,500 hospital beds I mentioned. Again, I had a little look before. In May last year, the acute hospital inpatient bed capacity expansion plan included 4,656 beds. So some of these are things that have been announced or just being re-included in a programme for government. But Conor, when we talk about kind of infrastructure as well, as somebody who does work in this space, to what extent do politicians and the public need to reassess what we think of when we think of infrastructure? We think kind of the shiny thing above the ground that gets attention and we can point to. But I just thought it was interesting how many politicians were added, and when it came to kind of spending the Apple tax money, that it needed to go on sewerage systems, on water systems, on the energy systems, on the electricity grid, things like that.
Yeah, we've become a grown-up country. a lot of people now understand where the money comes from. And while we love our cafes and we love our tourism and we love our farmers, at the end of the day, between them, farming and tourism produce less than 5% of our wealth. The 95% comes from those things at the other ends of the wires and the pipes, the industries. And from what I've seen so far, this is a programme for government that is far and about those things that actually put the money on the table and put the money into the departments that they can subsequently spend. So from my initial scan, 80% of it is about that proper grown-up governance.
You know, we mentioned, or I kind of mentioned kind of the programme for government washing up in the rocks of reality. What are the chances, Conor, that that reality is a Donald Trump presidency and trade wars and tariffs? And to what extent does that loom in the background of all of this?
From what I can see and what I've heard about the early versions, that's where a huge amount of the focus is. This is a programme for government for adults, by adults. And it's about those exact rocks that everybody's so afraid of. And it is running towards the gunfire, not running away from it. It's including proposals for us to get ourselves out into the United States and to be in that lobbying game in this dramatically changing world. It also identifies the need for us to square up to the kinds of changes that things like AI are going to bring to governance itself. So it's running towards the fire, not away from it.
Larkin, Simon Harris is going to be that lobbyer in chief, it sounds like, kind of a beefed up Department of Foreign Affairs with trade. He is going to be the kind of the Donald Trump point person, effectively. Is that it?
That's what it seems to be. I mean, given, I suppose, over Christmas, Simon Harris would have an op-ed was talking about how we need to kind of recalibrate our relationship and focus on trade. So he had an op-ed out there. People saying, oh, I wonder why he has an op-ed over Christmas. I imagine this was in the pipeline. He wanted to position himself very early to be that point person. And I mean, that is what he's going to be. It's going to be a difficult line to thread, because there is that element of, yes, absolutely, you need that relationship, you need to have influence there. They probably want to be seen as maybe the point people for the EU as well, that we were the ones who maybe have the relationship and can build that relationship. But also any element that seems to be sycophantic towards Trump would play very, very badly domestically. People may understand the economic impact of it, but kind of on a personal emotional level, I'm not sure people will want to see anything that seems like that they're playing to Trump's ego or just giving him exactly what he wants. So it's going to take kind of deft diplomacy to be able to manage that. And look, ultimately, a lot of this is going to be done at EU level. And really, I think success.
Is Simon Harris a good man for that deft diplomacy? Very, very competent politician. Obviously, he's been Taoiseach. He is one to shoot from the hip a little bit. You know, he kind of says the thing that's immediately popular.
Less communication.
That'll get me out of this interview. Yeah. And I worry that that's tomorrow's problem.
Yeah, I think
cervical promises around cervical smear. That almost collapsed the last government. People kind of forget that, or the government before. And what was the other promise he made? Oh, scoliosis surgeries within 6 months. I mean, anyone around him could have told him, don't make those promises.
Yeah, and look, obviously the Department of Foreign Affairs has been doing this for a very, very long time and managed to thread Brexit and managed to thread the 2016 presidency as well. I think ultimately...
Can they thread Simon Harris, is that what you're asking?
I think success when it comes to the US relationship will actually be no huge mention of Ireland. No massive focus.
Stay off the radar. No,
stay off the radar, that there might be a few conversations that would happen, but like being front and centre on the radar, that if the focus is primed on Ireland rather than maybe the EU, then I'm not sure if that's putting us in perhaps the best position. So if you can stay off the radar and do things kind of, you know, slowly, subtly, no changes effectively, because our relationship with the US, I mean, it does very well for us right now. So if you can do it with no changes, that would be effective. It'll be difficult, though, given some of the things in the programme for government.
Conor, were you going to jump in there?
Well, these are dangerous times we're coming into. And I think that Larkin has put his finger on it. There's a big vice grip about to happen between Europe and the United States, and it'll happen in the digital space because of our track record of becoming the enforcer for a lot of these issues. Ireland, willingly or otherwise, could end up being the walnut in the vice crack, and we may not be able to escape it. There is a huge realignment happening. Europe is going to have to get incredibly tough compared to its previous getting along with people stance, and Ireland may end up being the pointy end of the spear.
Megan, to wrap things up, Pete Lunn, the behaviour economist, was on The Breakfast Show with Kieran Shane this morning. He was talking about this survey that suggested Irish people are the most optimistic in Europe. Are you optimistic for the next 5 years, given what we know about this programme for government, given the kind of largesse in the public finances, but yet those kind of clouds looming on the horizon, to butcher an old metaphor?
I'd say I'm an optimistic person, but I just think you mentioned there are a few empty promises and the things that were said and done and never actually materialised. So I think I'm kind of same with the VAT thing. I think it's like I won't believe anything until it actually happens, and then maybe I'll be like, all right, okay. Every time a budget comes out, I look at it, and to be honest, it never really does affect me, good or bad. So in that sense, I'm kind of just going to ride the wave and see where it takes us. But I do think we're in a very interesting time. You mentioned there with America, with Trump coming in. He's supposedly coming here during the summer to visit his estate, and possibly there'll be a few visits from many other people to come see him. So I do think it's an interesting time to be involved in politics. It's an interesting time to be working in media and everyone to look on. But as I said, I'll remain optimistic for myself, but I don't know about the government.
Megan Scully, broadcaster and freelance journalist, Conor Skehan, columnist, Lorcan Nine, head of training at the Communications Clinic. Thank you all very, very much.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.